Thomas Paine was the son of a staymaker born in Thetford in Suffolk in 1737. He was apprenticed to his father after he left school in Thetford and became a staymaker himself, but not very successfully. He wasn't particularly keen on it. He did set himself up in business but failed. He twice tried to get out of it by running away. And eventually, on the death of his first wife, whose father had been an excise man, he decided that he would apply for a job in the excise as well, which he did, and successfully got a placing in the excise in Grantham in Lincolnshire. In 1765, he was dismissed for some malpractice in the excise, and for a while he actually set up as a school teacher in London, but he wanted to get back into the excise service and was readmitted, so he can't have been culpable of any really serious offence. And eventually, he emerges from relative obscurity, actually. We know very little about his early life, as an excise officer in Lewes in Sussex. And that is the most well-documented part of his early career. He married a second time to the daughter of a shopkeeper in Lewes. And when her father died, he set up shop with her. And then he emerged from provincial obscurity into something of the early limelight with the case of the officers of excise, which is the first thing which appeared from his pen in print. Now, this particular document is often misinterpreted. It's said that Paine put up an argument for improving the salaries of excisemen, almost off his own initiative, but and under pressure from his fellow officers throughout the country, and was therefore hailed by some radical historians as being an early kind of trade union advocate for raising the wages of his colleagues. Whereas more recently, that interpretation, I think, has been quite rightly questioned, and that the initiative for the case of the Office of Excise to improve their conditions and salaries came not from the men themselves, although there was plenty of grievances amongst them which would lead them to advocate higher wages, but from the Board of Excise itself, the Commissioners of Excise, and particularly from a man who doesn't loom large in many accounts of Paine's early life, but quite clearly was a patron. And this was a man called George Lewis Scott, who was one of the excise commissioners on the board in London, and for reasons we were not entirely certain of, commissioned Paine to write this case, to present to Parliament, to advocate the increase in the salaries of the excise officers. Now, why a commissioner of the excise should want to do that is also interesting. It's clear that George Lewis Scott was no radical himself. On the contrary, he was a leading Tory who was suspected of Jacobitism at the time, although his name came from the fact that his father had been a diplomat in Hanover when he was born, and George Lewis is from the Elector of Hanover, who became George I. But George Lewis Scott had been a tutor of the young George III and was very influential in George III's circle. And he was aware that the king was strapped for cash, as it were, that the revenues voted for the crown by Parliament were proving increasingly inadequate to service the government because of inflation, which had started to become quite serious in the 1750s and 1760s. And so Scott, realising that only Parliament could vote an increase in revenue to pay for an increase in the salaries of the excise officers, was really interested in helping the king get out of financial difficulties more than the excise officers themselves. And so Paine comes in as really supporting George Lewis Scott, who is a royalist rather than any kind of radical. And this raises the question of whether Paine himself was a radical in his early career. And my view is that he wasn't. I think he was apolitical, really. There's no real evidence that he got involved in political disputes of any kind. There's a curious story that he was the member of a so-called headstrong club in Lewes, which was a debating society, and that he argued in that vociferously and successfully, impressing the members of the club. But the very existence of that club is very dubious. And as an excise officer, it's hard to think that Payne would deliberately get himself involved in criticisms of the government anyway, because he had to be loyal to the Crown. He'd sworn an oath to be loyal to the Crown in order to keep his job. And therefore, it seems to me that it's not until quite late on that in his career, when he's in his late 30s, in fact, that Payne becomes open to radical ideas. And this happens, I think, as a result of his being involved in writing the case of the officers of excise. The petition to Parliament was unsuccessful. The government at the time, led by Lord North, was not in a position to award larger increases in salaries to government officials. It was itself finding raising revenue very difficult, especially when it's getting increasingly involved with the American colonies and their problems. So that the whole effort to get the pay of the excise men raised was unsuccessful. And I think Payne felt bitterly disappointed by that, because something which had brought him out of the obscurity of Lewes into the metropolis, rubbing shoulders with peers of the realm and prominent playwrights like Goldsmith, was suddenly out of the limelight altogether. He'd been unsuccessful. Not only that, but he had enemies in the excise service as well as friends, some of whom complained that his absences in London had led to the neglect of his duties, and he was again, on that ground, dismissed from the excise service. This time, for the last time, he asked George Lewis Scott, his patron, to reinstate him. If he could be reinstated, Scott tried, but failed. Meanwhile, Payne's marriage has collapsed, his second marriage. They didn't get divorced. It was very difficult to get a divorce, of course, in the 18th century, especially if you were a fairly humble citizen. But they did draw up articles of separation in which Payne separated from his second wife, Elizabeth Olive. And third of all, their shop, which they jointly run, went bankrupt. So he's hit by a triple whammy, if you like. He loses his job, he loses his wife, and his shop is declared bankrupt. So in the words of Bob Dylan, when you've got nothing to lose. It's that which leads to him going to America.